Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 97-year-old Barb Schober of Ellensburg, Washington, one of the very few, the very proud, the woman Marines of World War II. If you happen to stumble across a recruiting poster from that era for the Marine Corps Women's Reserve, it might say, "Be a Marine, free a Marine to fight." The idea was that many duties carried out by men stateside could be just as well handled, if not better managed, by a woman, freeing up those men to head overseas for combat. You heard Barb explain how, after helping inspect B-25 bombers at the North American Aviation Factory in Inglewood, California, she and all of her Seattle roommates found a way to support the war effort in uniform in different branches of service. That Marine Corps uniform was one thing she was drawn to, but let's hear what Barb did and where she went.
I was in North Carolina and Camp Lejeune, and I was there in permanent personnel, and I was sectioned to the adjutant of the boot camp. And when they disbanded that, they sent me to Henderson Hall in Washington, D.C. Well, Arlington, Virginia. Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon right down the street.
Well, and I'm just curious, was there something specifically about the Marine Corps Women's Reserve that you said, yeah, that sounds like that's the right way for me to serve my country?
A little bit. I liked the uniform, and there were just a lot of things about it. I thought they were really picky. You had to have 1 year of college or at least 2 years of some kind of business schooling, or they wouldn't take you. So their standards were really high.
Well, what was the training like? What did they put you through?
Well, when I worked in the first sergeant's office in Washington, Arlington, Virginia, I was a muster roll clerk. And so no erasing. And on both sides of the paper. And you kept track of everyone that worked across the street in the legal annex. And there was one girl whose husband was killed in the Marines early in the war. And she was joined the Marines. And when she left, it took 5 Marine fellows to do the work that she had done before, because she worked over there at the Naval Annex. So I used to just go my bed, and the first sergeant's officer just went upstairs to the first sergeant's office. So it was really nice. And I used to take my trips and walk where the unknown soldier was, because it was right, Henderson Hall was right next to it, was nailed. Their screen was nailed. And I used to walk in there, and in the wintertime, the maple trees was like 2.5 feet deep. And I would walk all the way and then back again. And that's what I did on my lunch hour. Instead of eating, I did that.
What about when you were at Camp Lejeune? What were you doing down there?
I worked for the adjutant, so I had a good job. And the woman that was in charge of all of the women Marines came through. One girl I remember, she met her husband someplace under a trestle or something, and they caught her. And so she was on bread and water for 3 days. Crazy.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of things.
Was there an aspect of serving in the Marine Corps Women's Reserve at that time that was, in your mind, the most difficult or challenging?
I think that I had a really good job. It was interesting, and I played a little bit. I remember when the war was over with, and you couldn't find anything in any of the stores because people were buying civilian clothes. Because everybody, during World War II, almost everybody was in some form of military. And I finally found an outfit. But that's been a long time ago.
Yeah.
That wouldn't fit me now, but...
Did having that uniform make you popular?
Well, you know how they say. They called us BAMs. BAMs. What did the gun, little gun say to the big gun? BAM! BAM! And then they would say, as they were walking away, and we knew what brought Marines was what they meant when they said BAMs.
How did you feel about that moniker?
I didn't like it, but it was just another way for them to vent their feelings. They were, all the guys were worn out.
A couple things I want to circle back to. So when you're going to the business school and you were working for Sears and Roebuck, they had you help sell war bonds?
Yes, that was really interesting.
What did you have to do?
I was the one that was chosen to represent Sears and Roebuck, and we went out with all the war heroes and sold the war bonds.
Where all did you go?
Well, they had us go to the armory, and that was wonderful. My mother and dad came over for that. I didn't tell them about it at all. And I saw it on the front page of the paper. So my mother and dad came over. And when they went to go to the armory, they said, "Sorry, Paul." And I was not smart enough to get them tickets. So they had a good time. But in that parade, we went all the way through Seattle in convertibles and set up high. So it was a big deal.
You were a big deal. And I'm just thinking, you know, I've talked to women who were Rosie the Riveters, and I've talked to women who did war bond drives, and I've talked to women who served in uniform. You did all three of those things.
Yeah, I did it all. Then I learned to waitress and bartend. So I did that for a long time.
Well, and I...
Now, I started a company, Mark and I, my son, M2 Industrial, and we have a fencing and guardrail business that's just going crazy. So we're doing real good at that. So I'm the president of that. So everything works out good.
So I left off entrepreneur on my resume for you.
So I've done a lot of things.
Well, and I read here another thing that you did when you were in the Marine Corps Women's Reserve was they had a homecoming parade for Admiral Nimitz?
Yes, and I decided I'd like to march in one of those, and so I practiced. So when we did that, by the time we did that, we came down and I heard a guy say, because we wore our mufflers over our uniforms on top of it, he said, "Just looked like a sea of green and red come down the way, because the cats, have rid of them." So that was real good, because there wasn't very many people that were able to do that. And we really did a good job. Not one person was out of step.
So one of my favorite World War II movies is They Were Expendable. It's about PT boats in the Pacific, and John Wayne is playing a PT boat captain. But I wasn't born yet when that premiered. You were at the world premiere for that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was held in Washington, D.C., and in a theater there. And I went to it, and a girlfriend, and that was just wonderful. We had tickets for it, and I had the program and gave it to my grandson, and he took it to school and never got it back. So.
So were you guys there in uniform at the theater?
Yes. Absolutely. It was a lot of fun.
Did they have John Wayne there too?
Yeah, but he was just there just barely and was gone.
And you mentioned earlier, you made reference to the end of the war. That made me wonder, as the war is progressing, was that something where you all were aware of different developments and kind of riding that wave of ups and downs?
Well, I was privy to it because the teletype used to come in, so I knew all the time when they were going on these different things, like when the Marines landed at different islands and were on their way up to Japan. And if they hadn't bombed Hiroshima, Japanese would have skipped right on, right to the last man. And there was no way that you could do anything with them. And so I like the Japanese But I'm here to tell you, they can say all they want to, but it would have cost us so many American boys that we would never have gotten over it. We've taken every man and woman, young and old, overseas, and the Japanese would not give in. They'd fight to the last man. So there was no way. We had to bomb, and you had to drop it.
And, you know, when you said because the teletype would come into your office, you were aware of these troop movements and the invasions, that probably means you were aware of the numbers of casualties that were being absorbed.
You saw all that, and it was hard to take a lot of times. The death march was terrible. And the Japanese were brutal. If you were going on this thing and you had no food or water and you marched and you couldn't, they would just stab you and kill you and you'd lie across the way. So Japanese are different now than they were then.
Well, and a lot has changed in our country too. And one way is the opportunities for women, particularly in the service now.
Absolutely.
So when you think about the way the military is now and all the things that women are allowed to do now that they weren't allowed to do when you were in the service, do you feel like you paved the way for them a little bit, that you did something that created more opportunities for others?
Oh, I don't know, but we all tried, yeah. So, yeah, I think so. Did a lot of things.
And would you have been in Washington, D.C. for both VE Day and VJ Day?
No, VJ Day, I was in San Diego. That was nice. Had a good time. And two women whose sons were overseas, they drank scotch and milk. I always remember that.
Well, and I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you, but now that you have another 3/4 of a century of history in which to view what you did all those years ago, how would you explain the significance of what you and all those other women Marines did?
The reason that they had us women Marines in there in the first place was to provide for us to let the guys go overseas. So there were a lot of women Marines, and our Sergeant Major in the boot camp in Camp Lejeune was wounded 5 times. He was at Guadalcanal and he was shot 5 times. He said it was a good thing he had his bush padded because he was a little, not very tall, but he was round and rotund. But he was a sergeant major, so he'd been in Marines for a long time. And he didn't like being stuck with a woman in the boot camp, but he did.
Does that mean he made it tough on you guys if he wasn't thrilled with that assignment?
Oh, yeah. He was in shaking his finger. But he had a really good group of women that worked with him. The drill sergeant and the sergeant major were the only 2 men over there.
And how did you get along with all those other ladies?
Fine. I got along good with everybody, yeah. And when we got through boot camp, most of the people went their way. And like I said, I was the only one from boot camp. We had to take an IQ test, and I had a higher IQ test. And so that was the reason that I was permanent personnel.
I'm glad you didn't use Yogi Berra's line about the IQ test. And a couple years ago, you got to go with your son to the other Washington, and see a lot of really neat things.
Yeah.
Tell me about your honor flight experience. What was that like?
Well, every place that we went, and they just took us on the bus. We didn't have to stop at any stop signs or anything, because there was a guy that was on motorcycles and he was putting his hand out and telling them to let us through. And we just went from one memorial to another and saw them all. There was not one memorial that we didn't see. And we got back on the bus and got on the plane. And that was my birthday. And from the podium they said, and here was all that plane load of guys, and there was one girl and myself. But they said, we've got a birthday girl. So they bought me a birthday cake. It was a cupcake with a candle in it. So that was the best birthday that I ever had because of all the people were all clapping and made me feel good.
Well, I bet. And I'm just thinking, you know, all those memorials you got to see, they weren't there when you were working in Washington, D.C. So let me ask you about a few of them and get your impressions of them. And let's start with the big one, the reason that the honor flights exist, the National World War II Memorial, where there's a wall of gold stars for 406,000 Americans who died. You know, there's a state pillar for Washington, where you grew up and where you live now, and a lot of other things. What did you experience there at the World War II Memorial? What was your impression?
Well, I'm just wide-eyed because there was so much to see. I went there with a grandson of mine and saw the Vietnam War Memorial. And he was responsible for me seeing my picture come up during the thing. And that was nice.
Well, let's talk about that. So that's at the Women in Military Service for America Memorial, which is actually really close, I think, to that walk you described. So tell me what you saw and what they did for you there at the Women's Memorial.
You just said who you were, and they told you which place to go to, and then it came up on the screen.
So you're there at this memorial that people from all over the world come to see and learn about how women have served our country, and they pop your picture up on the screen. So, yeah. I mean, you're a big deal.
Yeah, I was a big deal for a second. Anyway, I had a good time.
And another thing that wasn't there yet when you were stationed there is the Marine Corps Memorial and that giant statue of the Marines atop Mount Suribachi. Did that get to you a little bit, looking at that?
We drove around that, and no matter which way you, when you drive around it, the flag is always there. I don't know how they did it, but they did. But the thing that really got me was the Korean War. Those fellas in Korea, it was awful. A lot of them had chemicals in the dead of winter, and it was cold as all get out, and they just froze to death. Those that lived had frostbite and lost their toes.
We're overdue for another break, but have you noticed that Barb Schober's birthdays are anything but ordinary? For one, she was on her honor flight to Washington, D.C., and for this 97th birthday, she was willing to sit down and share her story with us. And we're not quite done yet. When we come back, the popular tourist destination where you someday may be able to examine something very special to Barb, a memento from her World War II service, and the woman who was asked to be a Grand Marshal of Ellensburg's famous rodeo parade this year in recognition of her efforts to honor World War II vets like Barb. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and links to more information related to this week's episode. And we'll be right back after this.